Okay, Psalm 12. This psalm, Psalm 12, is about the importance of commitment to the truth. It's another theme. God's word is pure. The word of the arrogant, on the contrary, cannot be trusted. The psalmist describes it as corrupt. This psalm is also a plea to God to stop the powerful using words to oppress the poor and to corrupt society. That'll always be the case. There'll be always those who are doing that. And this psalm is a cry for it to stop. But God can't stop it, do you get me? Because if people want to continue doing it, they do it. They're free. We're free. But if enough people want it to stop, we could do more. And we've got to wake ourselves up. And if we don't want untruth, let's say it. And say it clearly and say it with everything in us and be angry about it. Otherwise we accept it, it just goes on and on. So let's begin then. That's just an introductory statement about the psalm, and here we begin the psalm itself. Verse 1. Give us your saving help, Yahweh, for there's no longer anyone who respects the covenant. Sincerity has disappeared from the human race. So, pretty bleak. The word for anyone who respects the covenant is one word in Hebrew. I did it with you in another psalm. Hasid. Hasid. The Hasidim you've probably heard about. Chesed is God's love. And the Hasid are those who welcome God's love and are faithful to their part of the bargain. Or the I'm your people, I'll be your God, you'll be my people. Well, this is being God's people. And responding, and if it's in a covenant situation, it means keeping the covenant and respecting the commandments and doing what we should do as human beings to be welcoming of God's love. Or alternatively, we can be Russia. We can just say, oh, who cares about God in here, and go and do our own things and make a mess of the world. Here's some comments from the scriptures that might be reflecting on that verse for you. Oh, disappeared from the human race. Human race is an English translation and a perfect translation of the Hebrew word Adam, as in the Genesis account. When God made Adam, he didn't make a bloke to be followed by a girl, a woman, you know. He made the human race. That's what it's talking about. And then he describes in another little lovely simple way about the rib and all that. But basically he first of all describes that God made the human race, and then he says why there are male and female in the human race. But you don't get male till you get female. Ish and Isha happen together. They're co-created, they're all there in the human race. Whereas often we think of, and then Adam does become, sadly, the name for the bloke. So that's the confusion that's in the text itself. But the story is clear enough. Well, here we are. Jeremiah 7:28. This is the nation that did not obey the voice of Yahweh, their God. They did not accept discipline. Truth has perished. It is cut off from their lips. And a little later, Jeremiah writes, he's writing in Jerusalem at the time of the destruction of the city in the early years of the 6th century BC, in Jeremiah 9:3, they bend their tongues like bows. It's not straight talk at all. They have grown strong in the land for falsehood, not for truth. They proceed from evil to evil, and they do not know me, says Yahweh. And finally, I could go on and on, but won't. Proverbs chapter 20, verse 6. Many proclaim themselves loyal, but who can find one worthy of trust? Verse 2. They utter lies to each other. They speak with flattering lips and a false heart. And the psalmist, as we'll see, includes in this criticism those who use the judicial process to achieve their wicked purpose of despoiling the poor. Wasn't it Voltaire who said the law is like a spider web? The little flies are caught and the big flies break free. Has it changed? If you've got enough money, you can probably manage to work. We've got a good system, I don't want to knock it. It's the best, you know, we can get, I guess. And we should be so grateful for the work that's gone into building it. But we've got to protect it. We've got to insist on it not being controlled. Isn't it the same with the public service too? We've got to insist that the public service, which is one of the big achievements of democracy, is kept free of political manipulation. Otherwise, we're in very dangerous territory. We're moving into it all the time. So, verse 3 now of the same psalm, Psalm 12. May Yahweh destroy all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. Those who say, with our tongues we will prevail. Our lips are our own. Who is our master? I guess you could say, we'll say what we like if it suits us, and no one's going to stop us. Here's a pretty good statement from the book of Proverbs, chapter 26, verse 23. I think I like the poetry, and it's pretty clever. See what you think of it. Like the glaze covering an earthen vessel are smooth lips with an evil heart. An enemy dissembles in speaking while harboring deceit within. When an enemy speaks graciously, don't believe it. For there are seven abominations concealed within. Seven meaning full. Though hatred is covered with guile, the enemy's wickedness will be exposed in the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and a stone will come back on the one who starts it rolling. A lying tongue hates its victims. A flattering mouth works ruin. Not bad from the book of Proverbs. Fair bit of...
extraordinarily contemporary.
It is. Now, here's James from the New Testament. His letter, more than any other book in the New Testament, is aware of the power of the tongue to hurt, to deceive. And here we've got James, chapter 1, verse 26. If any think they are religious and don't bridle their tongues, but deceive their hearts, their religion is worthless. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this. This is what religion is: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, to keep oneself unstained by the world. And later, and I could give you more from James, but in chapter 3, verse 5 and the following, he says, the tongue's a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire. And the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body, sets on fire the cycle of nature, and is itself set on fire by hell. With the same tongue, we bless the Lord and Father, and with it, we curse those made in the likeness of God. You wouldn't disagree with most of that, would you? And we've all got to be so careful of the words we speak, haven't we? Harm they can do. Often when you're in conversation and someone brings up something against another person's character, which happens quite a lot, some people do it because it makes them feel better, I think. They somehow feel a bit up, whereas by pushing other people down, I don't know how it works. Often you, without being, I don't know really what I'm saying, you've got better advice than I have, but often without being rude, you mightn't be able to directly come in and oppose it. Some people can, and maybe you can. But there is another way too. Sometimes it's... sometimes you can actually throw in another word, of say, you know, like it's on the positive side, to just gentle it down a bit. If you're not in a position to directly confront the person without offence or hurt, sometimes you should do that, I guess. There are other ways of saying, oh, yeah, but the other day he was really kind to me and he said this and... Do you know what I mean? You just flatten it out a bit and say something positive in the community so that people... Because I think then the other person thinks they get the message in a gentler way. I don't know. Well, here we are, verse 5. Yahweh responds, says the psalmist, and this is Yahweh's response to this, because of violence against the poor, because the needy groan, I will now rise up. I'll keep them safe. There's our word again, yasha. You know, it comes into salvation, help, Isaiah, all that stuff. I will keep them safe as they give their testimony. Here's a quote from Amos, the earliest of the writing prophets, chapter 5, verse 7. He's a wonderful prophet to read, and it's not very long prophecy, but gee, it's biting and modern. He was just amazed. He was worked in an orchard, just a pretty unschooled, I suppose, bloke, and he came to the big smoke, Samaria, the big city in the north, and he was shocked when he saw poverty and riches side by side and saw people building all these wonderful things and other people living in nothing, and he was just amazed at the injustice of it in Israel. I mean, you know, like another country maybe, but not in our country. Imagine what he'd say today. With fences and all. Well, here, this is what he said that day anyhow. Ah, you that turn justice to wormwood, you know, that very bitter herb, and you who bring righteousness to the ground, dashing to the ground, the one who made the Pleiades and Orion and turns deep darkness into morning and darkens the day into night, who calls for the waters of the sea and pours them out on the surface of the earth. Yahweh is his name, who makes destruction flash out against the strong, that's the lightning, so that destruction comes upon the fortress. They hate the one who reproves in the gate. They abhor the one who speaks the truth. And he's telling them to beware of this Yahweh. Now, quite a lovely little thing to come in the middle of all this. Verse 6. The words of Yahweh. Now, as distinct from the words that he's hearing and the corruption around him, he says this beautiful thing. He says, the words of Yahweh are words that are pure, like silver refined in a furnace, fired 7 times. It is you, Yahweh, who will take us into your care. You will free us forever from these people. I wish you luck, I feel like saying to the author. But he does believe, in other words, ultimately truth will matter and truth will out and ultimately... And then there's a verse, and I don't know how to translate it. No one knows. It's ambiguous as we've got it in the Hebrew. And I've given you 2 possibilities. Either of them is correct. On every side, the wicked prowl. People look up to what is vile. People look up to what is vile. The word for vileness is there, and the word to look up or lift up is also there. And the Hebrew word, see, rum means to lift up, and k means like. So, lift up like something vile. So the suggestion is it's like you're mining, silver mining, and you've got all the slag heaped up. So the image could be people look up to this slag heap and it's just vile and ugly. It thinks it's big, you know, on the top of the range and controlling everything, but it's just a slag heap. It's just a leftover stuff that's not even worth humanity. That's that image. However, there is a word rima in Hebrew, which means maggots. And kerima, kerem, could mean like maggots, kind of a form of that word. And these people, you free us forever from these people. And who are these people? Those who do evil. So there's the word again. The vile word has now become evil. Who crawl like maggots over the human race, people. So it's a complex question of how to translate that, but both are readable. So I'm sorry to have distracted you with all that. I'll just say it again. You will free us forever from these people, those who do evil, who crawl like maggots among the human race. It's quite likely what he's saying. Or he might be saying, the wicked are prowling everywhere and people are looking up to the slag heap of their evil. And the last slide is just a comment. Anyone who bewails the corruption of language in the private and public arenas will know what the psalmist is saying. Words are meant for communication of truth in the collaborative task and privilege of building a better world. When people, for their own economic, political, or personal advantage, use words to deceive, the poor and needy are the first victims, but the whole social fabric suffers decay. So it strikes me as though that's a psalm we could do well to reflect on. Always, every generation needs to reflect upon it.